Reality Daily listeners, what is going on? This is Jeremy, and we are talking all things Survivor 46, Episode 5. And I'm doing it here with my guy, Wyatt. Wyatt, we've got a great episode to talk about. Probably the best of the season, I'd say.
Well, I think it was the best of the season, but I don't think that's saying a whole lot. It's like saying I was the best player on my basketball team in school, but I was homeschooled. You know, it's like it's been disaster episodes this season, but I still have a problem with this episode, Jeremy. I'm very excited for the merge. I'm still very optimistic on the season, but I'm sure as we'll get into, I was a little bit bummed out with some of the editing choices and stuff they might have left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, we'll talk all about it, but I'm looking at IMDb here, which ranks every episode, and this one got a 7.1 out of 10, which is a 7.7 out of 10, which is the best episode of the season. Episode 1 was a 7.2, if there's any kind of, barometer for that. But we'll be able to talk about all these, questionable editing choices and all of the new dynamics in this episode, but let's kind of go through each tribe by tribe, just as we've done in the past. And we'll start with, where do you want to start? You want to start with Nami? You want to start with, Yanu? We'll save Siga for last because they were the ones that went to tribal, but Nami first, does that sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So yeah, the Nami tribe again, haven't gone to tribal. But they are searching for this idol or Beware Advantage or something. They know something's out there. Nothing's come up yet. And Venus is the only one that knows that Randon left it. It was in Randon's pocket when he left the game. And that was two episodes ago. So Venus is looking. Hunter is looking. Tevin is looking. Soda is looking. Liz is not looking. So what do we think about Liz and her passivity when it comes to finding the idol? She says she can't find it because she will lose her shoes. But is there more to that?
I think that it could be one of these things where it's like she knows that she's on the outs. And if she is, looking for the idol and everybody knows it, even if it's just everybody's looking, they may look at her and say, hey, we don't know if she's got it or not. Let's take her out. It's like if you're Liz and you feel like you're on the outs, you probably don't want to give them any other reason to do so. I think Liz is somebody that would look for the idol. You don't run, a million businesses like she does and, make it so much money where the $1 million doesn't change your life and not, like, seize opportunities. I just think that she's somebody that would want to do it more so in private so it can kind of be a mystery. So I think that they're alluding to her kind of being lazy. I don't necessarily know if I buy it, but I think that if you're doing the draft at home for, like, who's going to get the zero vote finalist later on in the season, you got to think Liz is like a prime target right now.
Yeah, Liz could be that zero vote finalist, that goat, if you will. Because I don't see a whole lot of people voting for her if she claims that she doesn't really need the money. And then also add in the fact that she's not really being an active player in the game, but also like. Liz has mentioned a few times about how she has food allergies and she hasn't been able to, necessarily eat as much as the very little that everyone else is eating. And so I honestly think that that is playing a role in how Liz is playing the game. Like she doesn't have the energy or the very small amount of energy that, say, Hunter has to go find the idol or Venus or Tevin or anyone else of the game. I think that she's just there to kind of lay out in the shelter and just wait for whatever's next, and I don't think she's going to really put too much into her game. And look, if that strategy, it's honestly not a terrible one, I don't think, because it does take a target off of her back. But I honestly think that Liz is just struggling to live out there, and that is hindering her ability to play the game.
Yeah, she's a little bit like Dani from The Amazing Race. She has all these allergies. So maybe she's like a little bubble girl out there. She's like, you know what? If I sit in the bamboo, I'm not going to get into anything that's going to cause me any allergies or anything. So, you know, I can't get medevac like Randon if I just sit here.
Exactly. So we do see, you know, Venus is seeing that Hunter is searching for the idol. And so Venus is going to approach Hunter and, like, try to babysit him. And, you know, Venus is like, I need Hunter there. And Venus also says something very interesting that, you know, is very a very bold thing to say, especially to Hunter, where she basically says that Hunter, like, I see you as a threat, but I want you as a meat shield. Like, she told him straight up to his face, like, you know, you are a meat shield. And, you know, there is something to say about, you know, the honesty of these players. But, like, what do you think, Wyatt? Like, is it, like, there is a lot of honesty in the new era, but is this something you want to say to someone, even though you're, like, you say you're protecting them, but you don't really?
Yeah, you have to really judge it by the person. I think with Hunter, I think that it probably, I don't want to say it was going to work because I don't think it's going to, but I do think you're more likely to get in Hunter's good graces if he feels like, hey, she's not coming at me in the short term, so I don't necessarily have to gung-ho take her out first if we go to tribal, although he probably would. I don't have to gung-ho, you know, take her out at the merge if we end up merging next, which he very well might. I just think that for Hunter, somebody that's so equipped to the game, I do think this would appeal to him a little bit more because he says, okay, while I know that this is going to eventually lead to her turning on me, it's not going to happen in the short term. So let me move my pieces accordingly and maybe take out some people that are a little bit more of an imminent threat first. But I think for some people, they would freak out at that where they're like, oh, my goodness, you're not going to just shoot me to the end. That's a problem. But I think Hunter, I think he has enough self-awareness, enough knowledge to know, hey, maybe this will actually be fine, at least for a couple rounds. And that's exactly what Venus wants, is for him to, like, let his guard down. But I really think that this editing here, Jeremy, I believe that Venus is going to be the most likely person to get the boot next week. Just so if we look at the confines of the game and add this to the editing, it just makes a lot more sense to me where Hunter's maybe going to be like, okay, well, like, I'm okay with Venus going. You got to think Nami's the target from the other two tribes because they are the only tribe that hasn't went to tribal. So, you know, they've never really solidified these bonds. I really worry for Venus's place in the game next week.
Yeah, well, if we're going to get the standard mergatory episode like that we've gotten in the new era as seasons past, you know, it will come down to, you know, which half of the group is safe and which half of the group is not. And so, yeah, maybe if Venus ends up on the wrong side, I could definitely see her as a bit of a target in the next episode. And the same goes for Soda as well. Like, I feel like Soda, you know, we see some talk from the previous episode about how, you know, Tevin and Hunter are trying to, you know, create like an anti-Soda bond. You know, Venus has already shown some disdain towards Soda. Liz has also mentioned that Soda is a threat. So I could see the Nami tribe possibly turning on Soda. And the thing with Nami is they're going into this merge. They have not had an opportunity to put their trust to the test. And that's something that Yanu obviously has done multiple times. And then Siga was able to do so in this episode. So I think that if you take that into consideration, you know, that's probably why Nami, even though they're five strong, they probably come into the merge as the weakest team because they don't have they aren't as cohesive and they haven't had an opportunity to be cohesive together. Like, you probably would assume that Tevin and Hunter would play together. You know, maybe there is something there with Liz, but from what we see, it looks like Venus is going to flip. It looks like Soda is potentially, you know, not as ingratiated with the group as she may think. So yeah, I think Nami has a lot to worry about going into next week. And now, you know, Hunter, we'll talk about him as well, because Hunter goes on the journey later in the episode. And this is the last we'll talk about Nami until later on. And so, yeah, so even though this happens later in the episode, we'll talk about it now. Hunter, Tim, and Q are going to go on this journey. And Hunter is going to, well, I think it was, I can't remember exactly who, you know, was the one to say, hey, let's do this and make this an idea. But they basically said, take one of your allies and we'll form an alliance of six that will have as many corners covered throughout the tribe. So you have Hunter. He's going to bring along Tevin, which is no surprise. We know Hunter and Tevin are one, are each other's number ones. Q is going to bring Tiffany. No surprise there. And Tim is going to bring Maria on board because he feels like as a parent, they have a bond stronger than, you know, the other players. What do you think about this six-person alliance, Wyatt? And I feel like this was kind of the start, the real start of the game, I think. I was really excited with this scene.
Yeah, I mean, we've had so minimal tribe interactions individually. I mean, we had that thing at the beginning of the season, but Jelinski is gone, so it doesn't really, you know, pay dividends here. Then Banu left, and there wasn't really a whole lot of strategy between Liz and Ben discussed. So I did really enjoy this. I love that Q brought this up, because Q knows, listen, only three people. We're going to be in danger. I want to make sure that I'm safe, and by proxy, Tiff safe as well. Hunter obviously has had a lot of issues with, you know, being so good in challenges, or I guess not issues for him in the short term, but issues potentially at the merge. And he knows this, and he's aware of this. This is why he keeps looking for the idol. And Tim, from what we've seen on the episodes, he seems to be the most on the outs, right? We see that people were talking about Ben's good vibes, and we knew the women were working together, and Charlie's doing a good spot, but Tim has been almost purple, and that's not good either for him, right? So I love this. I think it makes sense for all guys here. I am interested, though, in the fact that you said it's a no-brainer that Hunter's going to say Tevin. To me, it's not a no-brainer in terms of what he actually thinks, but I do think that there has to be a little bit of pause if you're Hunter and saying, do I divulge who my number one ally is to these people I just met? You know, who knows what could happen? Tim could be running the Seager tribe for all he knows, so I am shocked that he kind of would just, you know, divulge this info out there to these two guys. I figured maybe the smarter thing to do would maybe say something like Soda that you're attached to but not super attached to. That way, if it does come back to bite you, and then if you get to the merge, maybe you can just say, hey, you know what, Soda's being a little bit like wonky, let's bring in Tevin instead. I am a little interested in that.
That's a very good take on that, honestly. I think you bring up a good point, but also something to keep in mind as well. You know, Nami hasn't had a chance to go to tribal and really put these, you know, relationships to the test, and the same with Sega. And so you definitely know that like there is no way you can fully trust what they're saying. But also, like, Hunter, yeah, maybe if Tevin catches wind of this, maybe he'll, you know, say, no, like, I did not agree to this alliance. And, you know, Tevin can then, you know, decide for himself whether or not he wants to stay within that alliance. So it should be interesting. But the inclusion of Maria in this group of six is where this game turns. And it's where this game turns into an interesting one, because obviously we've seen Maria and Charlie as this, you know, duo, you know, young man, older woman, you know, team up, this Malcolm Denise pairing. And we're going to talk more about it later, but the fact that Maria is in this, and Maria has clearly indicated that she is Charlie's number one. And if Charlie catches wind of this, this could turn into something really messy for the other five people in that alliance. What do you think about that and that possibility?
What I think is, I think that Charlie and probably Ben will be included in this in some way, shape, or form. You know, maybe they won't tell Q ahead of time, but they're going to make sure the target's not going to be on those two people. And the way I foresee the rest of this game going, at least at this point, is I do think that this will work, at least for a couple of votes. We'll take out some of the stragglers there, and then I think maybe we'll see a Sega domination, and then we see a very heavy Sega in-game. So I'm thinking that they're going to be informed. I don't think that Tim is going to, like, not tell Ben and Charlie. For all we know, he might have already told them. We just haven't seen it yet. But yeah, I think a lot of people were a little bit shocked that Tim was going to label Maria as his number one. You know, a lot of people figured that maybe it would be you know, Ben or Charlie, because it seems like the guys were working together, but they're forgetting that, you know, there was a confessional at the beginning, not a confessional, but some game talk at the beginning of the season between Maria and Tim, talking about them being parents and how they should work together. And also, Tim's going to be well aware that Charlie and Ben are so close together because they're like two peas in a pod talking about Taylor Swift and Metallica. So he's going to know that those two guys are probably always going to have each other. So that's why he would go with Maria here. So just to answer your question again, I really think that Sega will be in on this. Maybe not Mariah, but I think the rest of the Sega will be in on this, even if they're not in the quote-unquote alliance.
Yeah, we'll talk about Sega, you know, a little bit later on, but I do want to give Yanu some screen time here. Not too much to talk about with Yanu, because they win a challenge and, you know, but Jeff kind of goes in on Yanu at some point, during the challenge. It's funny because when he's first two tribes to finish win immunity, and then the third tribe, otherwise known as, and then the castaways respond with the losers. And then he was like, I thought y'all were going to say Yanu. That was so savage.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Why is Jeff acting all savage on Yanu?
I think he knows that this is going to be a big storyline. I mean, how could you not if you're there? So you poke fun at Yanu because either A, they live up to the burn and they lose again, or, you know, you get this comeuppance where it's like, hey, like, we just shit on you, but you actually just won your first immunity. So either way, this was going to be a good moment, regardless of the immunity outcome. And I think that really just shows how strong, you know, the production, they know what's going to be popping on the episode and what people are really going to be enjoying.
Yeah, I think that it was a little overdone almost, but hey, you know, albeit, but it's funny because when Jeff said that, I was talking and I was like, I said Yanu before he did. So I guess, you know, I thought it, he said it. So, but yeah, Yanu's going to win. There is a little bit of gamesmanship kind of earlier in the episode between Q and Kenzie. Like Q is acting as if he wants to quit. He's acting if he wants to, you know, leave the game. And, you know, Kenzie has a confessional saying, well, if Q wants to leave, like, that's one less person for me to deal with. And then Q is going to basically respond to that and say, like, you know, that's an act. Like, I want Kenzie to not think that I'm going to, you know, like, he wants Kenzie to feel comfortable enough so that she doesn't play her shot in the dark. And we've seen this from Q a few times now. We saw it in the Jess vote where they gave her the fake idol so that she wouldn't play her shot in the dark. And now we're seeing it here with Kenzie. You know, Q, like, what do you think of this strategy here from Q to, like, try to prevent Kenzie from, you know, playing the shot in the dark? And, you know, do you think that it's necessary to go to these lengths, you know, to make sure they don't play the shot in the dark for that 1-in-6 shot of being
safe? I don't necessarily know if there's any reason not to do it. I just feel like if you're Q, Kenzie doesn't play the shot in the dark if Tiffany is able to pull the wool over her eyes. You know, she doesn't need you to have the sob story that you actually want to leave the game, right? You're not needed. It's Tiffany. It's on Tiffany to make that decision between you and Kenzie. It's on Tiffany to snow the other person so they don't play some type of advantage. But I really think with Q, I just think that he has, like, as much as he hated the Jelinski, like, quit thing during the challenge, he said, I do think that he is, the game's giving to him in terms of the elements and not having fire and things like this. And I think that he truly said this out of, like, hey, listen, if I go home, then I go home. And I think a lot of it's a little bit like revisionist history once he gets to the actual confessional and is able to talk with the producers. But I really feel that this was not his intention, and that's just a hunch by me, but I just feel that I don't know if I'm buying it. But as a strategy, it's fine, I suppose. Like, it would prevent a shot in the dark, but like I said, I think Tiffany is the person that is really in charge of, like, not getting Kenzie to play the shot in the dark if she is going to align with Q, which we don't know that for sure at this point anyway. It's still up in the air of who she really would go with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the strategy is it is his intention to be doing this, because we saw it earlier in the season with Jess. So we know that Q has a desire to try to lead these people astray so that they don't play a shot in the dark. I don't know exactly why these players feel so threatened by it, because we've only seen it work, like, up until this point in, like, in time. Like, they're recording this before Survivor 45 even comes out. And Survivor 45 is really the first time where the shot in the dark, you know, really foiled some plans. So I'm curious as to, you know, exactly how, like, exactly why they feel this way. But I guess, you know, if they don't play the shot in the dark, it's a 0% chance that they're going to be safe versus a 1 in 6 chance. So I do think that there is value in Q doing this. And it does seem to show that Tiffany is closer to Q going into this. But Tiffany also talked about how, you know, she really doesn't want to go to tribal council. She really needs Kenzie and Q for the time being. And so I think that's going to go a long way for her. But yeah, one more thing before we go to Siga, because I want to ensure that we talk about it. Hunter is going to get the opportunity at the Journey to play a Survivor knowledge game, and he'll win some kind of advantage. And the game that he has to play is rearrange these 20 Survivor logos in order. And Wyatt, I think you and I, we would have won this one. But we can't say the same for our boy Hunter. He's not going to get it right, and he's not going to win this advantage. What do you think this advantage would have been?
I imagine that it probably would have been something similar to what we saw with Drew in 45, where you basically get to remove yourself from a tribal council. So you can't vote, but you're also not eligible to be voted out. That's what I would expect it to be. Just because we've seen, you know, the double, the extra vote at the beginning of the journeys with Jelinski playing terribly. Then we saw with Banu and Ben, I believe that was supposed to be, what was it? Was it a vote steal? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've seen different things. So we can't just assume that it's a double vote. That's what I'm thinking, just because it seems like they do like to have 45 and 46 kind of like aligned in terms of some of the advantages and stuff. So that's what I imagine it to be. But
yeah,
you're right. I think that we would have won this. But it's crazy to me, because I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I don't make custom challenges in my house. I don't have my entire den with all the supplies like Hunter does. If you're that obsessed with Survivor that you've made all this stuff, I just can't imagine you not knowing, you know, the logos in order, just because I know you've had to do so much shit. You have to spend so much time thinking about the show. You know, so much of your brain has been devoted to Survivor. It's not like Q, who probably watched 2 seasons and applied and then watched another 3 during casting. You know, you are a guy that, like, is making the mazes and making the puzzles. Like, this should have been the perfect person to be able to do this. And I don't know if it's just like maybe the elements, the pressure, you know, being malnourished and everything like that. I'm sure all of that played into it. But I mean, you tell me, I was so bummed out, because it just seemed like he was the perfect person to have this type of challenge. But I also think it's bullshit that they had something that's based on Survivor history. I don't think Survivor's a game that you should have to watch to be able to succeed in. And I think that that is kind of what this is entailing.
Well, the thing is, you know, the way that they introduced it at the Journey was, you know, a Survivor knowledge quiz. And, you know, to volunteer for it, it puts a huge target on your back. And I think that's what they were trying to get at by introducing it the way that they did. Because if you volunteer and you say you know the most about Survivor, then that's going to put a target on your back. And now Tim and Q have this potential, you know, theory that Hunter, you may have an advantage, but now Hunter lost. He doesn't have a vote. Not only does he not have a vote for the next tribal council, but he also has that beware advantage that he's going to need to solve before he can even get to voting normally. So yeah, Hunter was the advantage king in this episode, but also some kings fall from power real quick. So we'll see how Hunter can, I guess, recover from this in the coming weeks.
It's also crazy for Hunter, who has dominated these team challenges and these team immunities, to also expose himself to, you know, Tim and Q as essentially a super fan, saying, hey, I feel pretty confident in the knowledge here. It's like, okay, well, this guy has brains and brawn. You know, if there ever is going to be a time where this alliance isn't going to work together, who knows if they're even if it's even going to be a thing. But I think that that could come back to bite him as well, where it's like, hey, not only is this guy going to be competent in the challenges, but he actually knows the game really well. And I think for some people, that seems to be very intimidating if somebody has watched the show. It seems like almost like a detriment sometimes, and if somebody wants to work with you or not. So Hunter, I think I get why he did it. You know, same reason why he wants that idol. He feels like he's a target. He wants to have as many advantages as possible. But I do think that it potentially puts him in more jeopardy.
Yeah, Hunter's going to have to find a way to put targets on other people. And that's going to be a challenge for him, because he has been so strong and he has been so good at these challenges. But we'll see. I mean, look, Hunter has... Hunter's in a very interesting position. I don't think, but like Venus mentioned it, like, you know, people will see him as a target eventually. And I think that Venus was somewhat smart to do what she did, because, you know, she's not bullshitting Hunter. But I think that we're going to see Hunter these next few weeks as, you know, we'll see. I think in the next like 2 or 3 weeks, we'll see if Hunter is meant for the end game or not. And if I had to say right now, I don't think that he is. Like, I just think that someone is eventually going to say, hey, this is the one time he doesn't have immunity. Let's go for him now. It could be as early as next week. If he falls on the losing, you know, group, but I don't think he is. I think he's going to win this challenge, and then he's going to use that afternoon, because he knows he doesn't have a vote anyway. He's just going to go and look for the idol.
Yeah, I could see it going both ways, right? I do think that, and there's been some rhetoric online with saying, listen, if you are watching the new era, you know that the winners have not necessarily been your traditional winners from pre-40, right? Like Erica was quite under the radar. Marianne was somebody that you probably didn't expect to win for majority of the season. Gabler just came out of left field. And even though Yam Yam comes across as like a great player and somebody that I think us as the viewers saw, I think if you were playing the game in real time, he's coming from, you know, the minority tribe that only has 3 people at Tika 3, and then he's able to kind of like dominate his way to the end along with those other Tika 3. Maybe you look at Hunter and say, hey, like, of course Hunter is going to get out at some point. Maybe we actually do keep him around. Basically what Venus is saying about the meat shield. And but if all the meat shields work together, you know, then you have to have somebody in the end of the game that maybe would have been targeted earlier on in one of these other seasons. You know, history always repeats itself, and usually when something happens in a previous season, you'll see it reflect in the next season's gameplay, because they don't want the same thing to happen. And I do wonder if this is the season where you are going to have, you know, those type of people work together, and you will see the people who may have skated to the end in, say, 41, you know, your Mariahs, your Liz's, you know, maybe even your Venus's and your Sodas, you know, be taken out, you know. So these other people that might have been early merge targets because of immunity threats or whatever, maybe those people are actually going to be able to make it to the end together.
Yeah. So let's move on to Sega, the tribe of the hour. You know, we see them before the immunity challenge. They are learning how to salsa, which, again, it kind of contributes to this Sega vibe tribe. And they all seem very kumbaya. But there is something beneath the surface, because Jem has sent this tribe on a wild goose chase for this idol. And they've kind of come to the conclusion that there is no idol there and someone has it. And so people are speculating. I think Mariah is the first one to say that she thinks it's Tim or Ben, and Jem kind of hops on that train. But there's not like a whole lot of more discussion about it. But Tim is going to clock this. Tim's going to think that it's Jem. And then, you know, after the immunity challenge, you know, Tim is going to talk with Jem and basically like expose her. And Tim is going to be like, I know you have like, where is the beware advantage or something, like basically insinuate like that she has it. And Jem's going to be like, what? Beware Advantage. Like, one of the worst lying jobs I think I've ever seen on Survivor.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, credit to Tim for being able to kind of figure it out. But I really think, especially after that immunity challenge, I really think Jem tipped her hand a little bit, because we see that she's like, hey, I think we should all go idol hunting, but like not together. And you gotta remember, like, these people, they know how the idol was positioned because she put the actual paperwork in there. They know that you have to wait and like dig up this thing and find this. I mean, they have the idea of this, right? So they know there has to be some other part component to this. Now, whether that's going to be post immunity loss, they don't know. But, you know, they got to think that their light bulb's going to go off in their head when she says, hey, let's look for the idol solo. You got to be like, oh my goodness, like, of course that she's got something else to do. So I do think that's probably a big reason why we are kind of seeing that confirmation, or at least the hunch that these people have, that it was Jem. I just feel like just a really bad episode for Jem.
Yeah, you know, we talked a little bit last week about how this, you know, creating this lie about the Beware Advantage was more harm than good. And, you know, if you're one of the other people in the tribe, it's like, you know, you didn't do it. So there's a 1 in 5 chance, you know, that it's someone. And then, but the thing is also, she didn't disclose this information to her alliance. And I think that that was probably like the one misstep that she had. Like, if she had told, you know, like if she had told Maria and Mariah and Charlie that this was going on, maybe she's able to get away with it, because it bonds them together that the four of them are kind of in on this plan together. But Jem making this a solo mission has, like, you know, ostracized her a bit. And while they aren't fully confirmed that it's her, they know that it's someone. And then that's where the distrust starts to begin. And so I don't know if that's what contributed Charlie and Maria to vote the way they did. But it definitely, I don't think it helped her at all. And so she's going to spend the afternoon after the Sega tribe loses the immunity challenge trying to, get this idol. And so basically she has to take the machete, so the one tribe's machete, and she has to basically take it, measure a few things around the camp, and then use it to solve an equation to find the idol. She ultimately does, and she does it relatively quickly, at least in terms of the edit. But I imagine that, you know, she's doing this at a time when people are probably having conversations about voting her out. So I don't think that this really bodes well for Jem at this point.
No, definitely not. Now, at this point in time, I wasn't positive that she was going to go home. You know, I really did think that it was probably going to turn on Tim in some way. But that's when you start to see, you know, the plan come into motion, and then people not being okay with the plan. And that's kind of the issue when you have like the all male, all women divide. You know, we see the girls make the plan to, you know, target essentially Ben so that Tim can flush the quote unquote supposed idol. But you have to be in a group. If you want Charlie to be the fourth, I think you have to have that plan with him intact.
Yeah. So basically Charlie and Maria are going to realize that they are the swing votes here. With Jem and Mariah saying we should vote for Ben in a Ben-Tim split, and then, you know, to try to flush Tim's idol that doesn't exist. And then Ben and Tim are going to push for Jem. And they don't say exactly that we're voting Jem out because we know she has the Beware Advantage, but they're just going to say, hey, like, you know, she should be the one to go. And Charlie and Maria are talking about it. It's obvious that Charlie is trying to save Ben here. Maria picks up on that, but Maria doesn't necessarily say, hey, you know, I feel the same way about Jem. We need to go for Ben, or we need to flip it on Tim or something. And Maria also talks about how she has this extra vote and she's not afraid to use it. So the plan that they create is to put, or the girls create, is to put 3 votes on Ben, 2 votes on Tim in case an idol is played, and then Ben and Tim will vote for, you know, 2 votes on whomever. But obviously they don't realize that Ben does not have a vote because he lost it on the journey that he went on back in the Rand and Boot episode. So yeah, it's a bit of a, like, it's a good plan because you're kind of covering your bases as best as you can. But it's all for naught because Ben doesn't have a vote. There is no idol. I guess Jem has the idol, but you know, she's not going to necessarily need to play it. And she mentioned in some post-game interviews that, you know, she like thought about playing it. She never thought about playing it because she never truly felt in danger. And you know, that's how close she felt to her alliance. But the one thing I want to talk about here with this vote is, why does Maria use her extra vote? Why?
Yeah.
I've thought about this for 4 or 5 days now, and I'm just like so confused as to why she actually did that.
Is it possible that we just didn't see it, but there is like an expiration date on that vote, whether it's the merge? Well, would they? Like, if it doesn't necessarily matter, because her vote is not like the reason why Jem went home. It was just like a little bit of an additional like cherry on top. Right. So would they really tell that? Like, the issue I have with this episode as a whole is we really don't get Maria's perspective on anything. Like, I have no idea why Maria would take out Jem. Right. I'm sure that there's a logical reason behind it. We just didn't see it. We know why Tim and Ben do, because they don't trust Jem, and they're also trying to save themselves. We know why Charlie does, because he doesn't want Ben to go, and he's the target. Now, granted, would he have done this if it was Tim being the main person that was going to go home? Probably still, but we know that they're close, and he wants to save Ben. But with Maria, I mean, we can assume that Charlie just convinced her, and Maria is, like, good with Charlie. Maybe she didn't fuck with Jem. I don't know, but That episode has to give us something. And I know what they want to do. They want to blindside the viewer. They want to make it shocking. But to me, it's just like, you got to at least give us an idea. This vote would have been just as shocking to the average viewer if you actually gave Maria a reason why. You don't have to make it like a super compelling reason when she's like, I'm voting out Jem tonight because of X, Y, and Z. It could just be like, well, a benefit of keeping, you know, Ben around or Tim around is this. Or it could be like, Jem is you know, coming off as sketch, or I'm trying to think about the merge, and I think working with these people, but like, give us something that we can at least put two and two together. But you didn't do that, and that's why I really was so down on this episode, despite it being the best episode of this. The premiere might have been better, but I think in terms of the vote, it's the first real discrepancy we had when it comes to tribal. Like, we knew Jess was going home, we knew Banu was going home, and then, you know, Rand's medevac. We knew that Banu was going home times two, but this is the first time I think there was at least a little bit of intrigue there. It's just is a bummer that we just didn't really understand Maria's perspective, especially when she is, you know, what's supposed to be running the tribe. Like, her and Charlie are the two that's in power. Why are we not listening to her and getting her take?
I just thought that, you know, maybe instead of that salsa scene, maybe we get a little bit more of a Maria scene where we kind of figure out where her head's at. And I hope that the next episode will start with, why'd you use the extra vote? Because it just, like, it just doesn't make any sense based off of the knowledge that we have as to why she would have used it. Maybe she felt in danger, but she had no reason to. So, like, why use this vote when you could use it in a merge? And it would be more impactful. Like, even if, because Ben even mentioned it before, it's like, hey, well, if, let's just say I don't have a vote, like, you, Tim, and Charlie vote Jem, and that's it. That's all they need.
Yeah. It could be so one of these, like, things where she, like, it's like, well, let me flush this, because then every single person in the game knows that she has an extra vote, because Jelinski went and told his tribe, and I'm sure she could probably assume that that's what happened. You know, Tevin's probably into the same thing. So Maria's like, well, you know, if I flush it, then, you know, maybe it can't be used against me at the merge, which that's is fine if that's, but it's like, yeah, that's I would at least like something.
Explanation for her.
Yeah, I would like some type of explanation with that. And I'm sure we'll get that next week. And I'm okay with waiting to next week for that. But we shouldn't have to wait till next week to know why she voted out Jem. You know what I mean? Like, that should have been something that was told to us pre-tribal. So at least we had an idea of, like, why this could be a possibility.
Yeah, but maybe if there that scene is included, maybe it tips her hand or something. I don't know. But, yeah, some interesting editing choices in this episode we did get at. In store, but now next week it's the Mergatory episode. 13 of them left. They're all going to vote together in one big tribal. We talked a little bit earlier about how Venus may be in trouble, Soda may be in trouble. Is there anyone else that you may look at next week and is like, you know, that person, perhaps a target?
I think Kinsey could be in trouble as well. You know, Q's kind of been on the rampage. Who's to say that if that like, I'm going to call them like the Meat Shield Alliance, if that's a real thing, Q is probably willing to sacrifice Kinsey, wouldn't you think? Like, just to kind of get her out of the picture. And more importantly, to take the eyes off of him and Tiffany. So I think she could be somebody. And also, don't forget that Banu called her a mastermind. So these people are going to be coming into the game and they're going to say, hey, like, Kinsey's running the game. If we take out Kinsey, maybe we can add Q and Tiffany as a number because they won't have their fearless leader. You know, they don't know that it's a little bit more Tiffany running the game in terms of being in the middle, but they may just target her for that reason. But a lot of it's going to be a lot of variant too, right? Like when you're speculating who's going to be going home, it really just comes down to the editing, really. Like, you can say who's in trouble, but I mean, half the people are going to be safe. So it really could go a lot of ways. But, you know, there are people that I think there's very few people, I should say, that I think are completely safe. Like, I think that most of Sega is safe, maybe not Mariah just because she was on the outs. But I think they're pretty tight. I think probably Tevin's OK. But I think almost everybody else is like definitely on the chopping block if the numbers don't go their way.
Mm-hmm. It definitely makes for an interesting merge. I think that, you know, usually when the pre-merge is quiet, it creates for a pretty interesting post-merge. We've seen that, like, I think in 41, we saw that, you know, it was a kind of a self-explanatory pre-merge. We get a pretty solid post-merge. The same can be said for, like, 42. I do think that most of the early, like, the new era seasons, it's a pretty bland pre-merge for most of them. A lot of, you know, pretty self-explanatory boots and all that. But then it really starts to pick up in the merge. So I hope that this season is another example of that. We did see that also a little bit last season, although I think it took a little bit longer for it to kind of really set in. But yeah, I'm looking forward to what this season has in store. I think this episode was necessary to kind of get the ball rolling on a lot of these, you know, storylines.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to see five people that have been, from what we see, at least four of them, like, really excited to play. Like, Hunter is excited to play. Tevin's ready to play. Soda apparently has been, you know, if you believe what Tevin said last week, scheming. Venus is like, I can't wait to flip on these people. I mean, you've got four people that are going to be shot out of the cannon. And who knows what Lynn's going to do. But it's just going to be interesting to see these people play and see how these people interact. I think a lot rides on next week in terms of the average viewer's perception of the season going forward. I think people have been kind of down the season, mainly because we see that Yanu was just getting decimated and it kind of made the episodes a little bit one note. But this is really an opportunity to really reverse course completely and do a complete 180 on that. So I'm interested to see if it lives up to the hype.
Absolutely. And we'll be back to cover that hype at Reality Daily. So be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We're also covering The Amazing Race 36 this season, so be sure to check that out. And next week we'll be starting Challenge All-Stars 4 coverage. So we're covering all those and a whole lot else here at Reality Daily. So be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and catch us next week as we talk Mergatory. Thank you so much, and we'll see y'all next week.